Jazz, 91.9 WCLK, Atlantis Jazz Station. Jamal Achmed with the Soul of Jazz. And it's that time of the month again. It is time for Friday Jazz at the High Museum of Art. Of course, I host that every third Friday of the month over there at the High Museum. And we have our guest for today, who's going to be performing this Friday, the legendary Atlanta's own Joe Grandston. How you doing, sir?
Hey, man.
Don't look crazy when I say legendary, man.
Woo!
How's everything?
Everything is great, but I love that. I haven't been cut. That's a nice title. Legendary.
Man.
Does that mean I'm old?
Nah, man. It just means it's your season.
Oh, okay.
You've been doing it for a nice long time, brother.
I love it.
Thank you. And of course, we have the public relations specialist of the High Museum, Jessica Joris. How you doing, Jessica?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. Good to see you as always. So, Joe, let's talk, man, because, you know, I want to know more about you. I mean, I've seen you here in the scene for a very long time, and you're one of the kings of the scene. Where are you from?
I'm from New York. I'm born in New York City and grew up there and then moved upstate New York at a young age.
Okay.
And then back to Manhattan. And then I spent quite a few years in Georgia, in Atlanta, before I went back to New York in the late 90s.
Really?
And then I came back for good right around 2001 or two.
So where were you? What city were you in when you started, you know, really getting your jazz chops?
I was a professional musician. I was 20. And I was in Atlanta. I was finishing up at Georgia State University. I was actually in Buffalo, New York, to be honest with you. I was going to school at Fredonia State College. I was 18. I don't know how old you are. When you leave high school, mm-hmm. most people are 18, 19. I was 30 because I held back. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I was about to say.
But I left college after 2 years to go on the road with Tommy Dorsey's orchestra. And I think I was 19, and we toured all over the world. And that's when I became a professional musician and just loved it. But as far as being on a scene and playing in a certain city, it was Atlanta. After that tour ended, I came here and finished at Georgia State College.
Wow. So what was it like? What did you learn from playing with the Dorsey Orchestra?
Man, I learned everything. I went on the road thinking I was bad. You know, I mm-hmm. thought I was the man. I mean, I played in college. I played the solos. I got to play some gigs. And I really thought I was something special. And mm-hmm. I got my, you know what, handed to me when I went on the road. I didn't really know how to blend in a section. I really surely couldn't really read music on the level that I needed to. My ear wasn't right. Professional things like showing up on time, mm-hmm. what to wear. I mean, there was all these things that I should have paid more attention to when I was younger. But I learned right away out there. I mean, within weeks, I was 7, 8, 9 times the musician I was when I got there because I was going to be fired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was playing fourth trumpet. I was kind of phoning it in. I wasn't playing loud enough. I wasn't supporting the other musicians. It's the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra. They've been together since probably the early 1940s.
Right.
I'm not even sure exactly when, but they've been playing together for all these years, and of course, guys have left and passed away, but it's this core group, and it's very, very tight. And I wasn't really taking care of business, so I learned when I finished that tour, which was a year long, I felt like finally I had been, you know, educated on the level I needed to be.
Was it a little baptism by fire in there?
It sure was, but boy, I needed it, and I absolutely loved it. I loved learning how to blend with the section and really how to read and use my ear.
Right.
Know when I'm in tune, when I'm out of tune. Just soloing, standing up and taking a solo. I had transcribed Lee Morgan, Miles Davis, Freddie Hubbard, Chet Baker solos, Clifford Brown. I had all this stuff under my fingers, and I would stand up on a Tommy Dorsey song and rattle this stuff off, and it just doesn't make sense. It didn't make sense in that atmosphere, in that setting. So just to slowly mature and learn when to play that and when not to, and when I remember the quote that the leader gave me one night after I played a solo. He said, "Less is more." He said, "You're playing too much. You're just rambling. Nobody wants to hear all that." You know,
right.
It's different if you're on stage with a jazz quintet, right? And your job is to play the melody of a song, and then for the next 6, 7, 8, 9 minutes, you're improvising, you're creating music. But when you're in a big band setting and you have 8 bars to blow, you just gotta make some music, find some pretty melodies. And I learned, so it was fantastic. I love that experience.
You ran off some really incredible names when you talk about trumpet players, and you know, you look at the trumpet in jazz music. To me, is the first instrument. But somewhere along the way, the saxophone just kind of turned into this, I don't know, this thing where everyone wanted to play sax. But every time I hear trumpet, I always think of the essence of jazz. Talk about, you know, being a trumpet player and What is it? What are the nuances of being a trumpet player as opposed to being, you know, a sax player or a drummer?
Well, I mean, probably what you're hearing is the history of, you know, going all the way back to Louis Armstrong, you know, in everybody's sound, there's a little bit of that in any good jazz musician's sound. It doesn't have to be trumpet, but trumpet obviously is what he played. So that clarity, that tone, that singing sound that can ring out is what I fell in love with and why I knew right away. I think I was about 15. No, I was younger than that. I was 11 years old when I knew what I was going to do for the rest of my life.
Wow.
I heard those records, Louis Armstrong. I heard Chet Baker. I heard Miles Davis on record. Not CD. It was record back then.
Yeah.
And I knew. And I think the saxophone is like, you know, it's like the perfect marriage for the trumpet. You got these two powerful horns up front that are totally different in sound. We don't even like really hang out together, sax players and trumpet players, you know. But on stage, man, it's this great blend. When they're playing in harmony, a sax player plays a solo. Like, you know, think about the famous quintets, you know, like Clifford Brown and Sonny Rollins, or Bird and Diz, you know, or Miles and Train. You know, it's just fantastic.
Right. And speaking of the bandstand, let's talk about your live performance, because I think, you know, the city, you know, in the world of jazz, we really know what you can do. But some people haven't really had that Joe Grandston experience yet. I know I haven't to the fullest. I've seen you here and there. Mm-hmm. But how would you title the Joe Grandston experience?
I'm kind of a weird dude, man, because I really, really love trumpet and jazz trumpet. And that's my love, the bebop era, the hard bop era, the language, the bebop language. That's where my heart is. But I love to sing. I love Frank Sinatra and Nat King Cole. I love Freddie Cole. You know, I love all these great vocalists. So I started singing a few years back, actually quite a while back now, 12 or 13 years ago. And that kind of became part of my shtick, you know. And now I have this big band. Sometimes I'll do a quintet like at the High coming up. And so my show hopefully is entertaining. There's some singing. There's some songs that people will recognize from the Count Basie Sinatra songbook. But then we really like to dig into and play some originals and play some songs that maybe Miles recorded and kind of cover the gamut, you know. It also gives my chops a rest when I get to sing sing a few songs. But I love it all, man. I just love jazz, and I love being an entertainer.
You know, and we're going to get to Jessica right after this question, but I want to ask you about that, because I've always found it very interesting that you play horn and you sing. Which one came first?
Oh, trumpet. I mean, you know, as a child, of course, every child sings, but I played the trumpet. I fell in love with the trumpet, and I was probably 22 or 3, I got my first gig in Atlanta at Veni Vidi Vici, this Italian restaurant, and I played there on Sundays and Wednesdays, and I put a band together, a trio, piano and bass. Neil Starkey and Bill Anschell played with me at the time, and I specifically remember after about 3 weeks, the owner said to me, you know, you sound good, but you need to hire a singer. People want to hear these songs. They want to hear the lyrics. They want to hear the melody sung instead of played on your horn. And I said, I think we're getting paid $50. I said, all right, give me another $50. I'll get a great singer. He says, no, I'm not giving you any more money. I said, well, how am I going to, you know, what do you expect? He said, I'll just get another band. Don't worry. I said, well, you know, I sing. So I went home and told my dad, my dad is a world-class singer, and he sang, you know, in New York City growing up in all the clubs. He's a piano player and a singer. I told him, I said, I have to sing next week. So he taught me 3 or 4 standards. And I went in and I sang, and it probably was not very good. But the owner said, man, he liked it. And he said that you do that every week. So every week I would add a song. I would learn a song a week. And what I found out was learning the lyrics to these tunes that I've been playing was incredible. Now I knew what the song was about, finally. I mean, how ignorant to not learn that ahead of time, right? But I just never even thought about it.
Yeah.
I began this love affair with singing and learning about how to sing properly and learning how to phrase vocally, you know? So it was kind of a freak thing the way it happened, but I'm glad it did.
We're all glad it did.
Oh, thank you.
Thank God for that club owner or that restaurant owner who forced you into that. Now, I want to move over to Jessica Joris, who is the public relations specialist over there at the High Museum. Let's talk about what's happening at the High right now, because, you know, when they go check out Friday Jazz at the High, not only can they hear music, but they can check out all the wonderful exhibits.
Yeah, so at Friday Jazz this Friday from 5 to 10, we actually have a wonderful exhibition right now by a Cuban-American photographer, Abelardo Morel. It's called Abelardo Morel, The Universe Next Door, and it's a retrospective of his work from about the last 15 years. And Morel has worked with a lot of different techniques, camera obscura. He's an incredible photographer. It's a beautiful exhibition. And so to go along with the exhibition, actually this Friday at Friday Jazz, we'll be having some Cuban-themed food and a specialty drink called a liquid obscura.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Joe may have to pull out Manteca or something, man.
I was just thinking, man, we got some surprises for that. If I get one of those, what are they called, those drinks?
The liquid obscura.
Yeah, if I get a gallon of that, I will. No, I'm kidding. No, we'll do some Cuban influence songs for sure, man. We'll get the folks dancing.
Great.
Yeah, that's going to be a blast. I can't wait. You know, I was told by the folks that booked the Friday Jazz and this is a kind of toot my own horn, but I've done it every year. You guys have done it. 13 years I've got to do it once every year, which is, for me, fantastic. It's a really cool event.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, the way it's set up and the crowd really gets into it, man. Mm-hmm. Right before the show, you know, the week before, it's all over Facebook.
Yeah.
So every time I get the call, I'm so honored, and the guys in my band are excited. It's a real thrill.
Yeah, yeah. No, we're all looking forward to it. And like you said, that crowd is one of the best jazz crowds in the city. Who really come for the music and for the art. And speaking of, you know, people who appreciate the art, you actually have someone who I'm a big fan of, who's a big fan of you. Mr. Clint Eastwood is actually a huge supporter of you, has been a huge supporter of you over the years. How did that come about?
Clint's been a great friend, man, the past few years. He heard one of my CDs 7 or 8 years ago and liked it and invited me to California where he lives. He has a golf club out there, a beautiful golf club called Tehama, right up on the mountains. And I went out there and played an event he was hosting, a party, just brought a little trio and just did some background music. And it just turned into this great friendship. He is an incredible musician. He writes most of the music for his movies, plays piano, played trumpet as a kid. Mm. And we had a lot in common. I mean, he's twice my age. I think he's 84 now. Mm. Fantastic condition, fantastic shape. You know, he's very healthy. But we talked about the same things. He loved Miles. He knew Miles. Mm-hmm. He knew Chet. He knew Jerry Mulligan. He hung out with these guys. He knew Frank Sinatra. He'd go to parties at his house. So I'd ask questions, and he could give me these incredible stories. And I think it just turned into a very comfortable situation. So he's been great. You know, I'll go out there and maybe play in his golf tournament. He put me in the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, you know, a few years back, which was the dream of my life. I didn't make the cut, but I got to play in that. And through Clint and the connection with Clint, I've gotten a lot of nice gigs.
Oh, yeah.
He's a really laid-back dude.
Well, please tell him, like, I'm his biggest fan. He did the Bird movie, and that's one of my favorite jazz-inspired films.
That's a great film. He was here last year filming a movie called Trouble with the Curve, and he was here for a few months.
Right.
And we hung out a lot, and one night I took him over to Churchill Grounds to hear some music, and he had a blast. And my plan was to bring him over here and just kind of walk in and say hi to you guys and see if you'd let him say hello to the
man.
And it just didn't work out, you know. But we listened to the station. He was into it, man.
Oh man. Well hey, you know what? If it comes back around, please have him come by.
I will.
It'll
for
be
sure.
My honor. Jessica, any more information you want to put out? How can people find out more information about the High Museum and Friday Jazz at the High?
Yeah, if you want to learn some more about Friday Jazz and the High, just visit www.high.org. That's HIGH.ORG.
Wonderful, wonderful. That was the voice of Jessica Joris, the Public Relations Specialist at the High Museum of Art, and our special guest, Mr. Joe Granston, who is going to be blessing Friday Jazz the High this upcoming Friday, April the 18th, starting at 5 p.m., going all the way to 10 p.m., and you're doing about 3 or 4 sets. So.
Yeah, it's one of the longer shows for us. Usually our shows are 2 sets or 3 sets, so this is a long one, but there's just so many people and so much going on that it needs that. You know, the music starts at 5 and get people in the mood, and by 8:30, 9, 9:30, 10, they're still popping.
And they're still coming in.
They're still coming in. Yeah. It's a real thrill.
It is. Well, God bless you on all your future endeavors. And
thank you.
Say hello to the family for me, please.
I will, for
all
sure.
Right. Good seeing you, Joe.
Appreciate it, man.
Always.
Thank you.
Cool. Wonderful. Man, you know.